start this morning with a little chanting, and then we'll go into a sit, and I'll do some guided loving-kindness practice. So what I'd like to start with is the homage and the refuges, and then the Buddha's words on loving-kindness.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Now let us chant the Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease, whatever living whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Before we sit, is there anything on your mind that we need to clarify or that you need to express before we start to sit? Yes, please.
I think some of what we did yesterday speaks to this question. I just want to make sure that I understand it.
So it's a beautiful question, and yes, yes, and yes. There's room for all of those different techniques or ways of working. I work with it as in the same way that I work with mindfulness practice, which is that if there is, if something is arising and it's just kind of there in the background, it's fine to continue to do the loving kindness practice. However, as you know in your mindfulness practice, if something comes and it really is pulling, it's really pulling you, it's really pulling the attention, then you let go of the concentration practice, the object of your meditation, and pay attention to what becomes predominant, what is predominant in your experience. So if you're trying to send loving kindness and what's arising is anger or rage or depression or anxiety, then it will be quite difficult to continue to send kindness without attending to this, you know, overwhelming or predominant experience. So you pay attention to it. Investigate it, see how it feels in the body, see what's going on in the body, see what's going on, what the stories are, what the emotion is, understand it, investigate it, and then when it disappears, if it does disappear, or when it lessens and it's no longer predominant, then returning to the practice, to the saying of the phrases, or however you do loving kindness practice. It's probably a good time to mention the four great efforts that the Buddha talked about in the path, right? Effort being one of the elements of the samadhi practice. So, as you know, the Eightfold Path is wise intention, wise understanding, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. You know, so there's wisdom, there's sila, and then there's samadhi, which is wise effort, wise concentration, and wise mindfulness. So within the wise effort, there are four. There's preventing the unwholesome from arising. So the way it's phrased is preventing the unwholesome that has not yet arisen from arising. Right? So one makes the effort in loving kindness practice to be with the wholesome. So that's the first great effort. Then the second great effort is if the unwholesome does arise, to abandon it. Right? So you pay attention to the unwholesome with the hope that it will be abandoned, or with the effort to abandon it. And then the third is cultivating the wholesome that has not yet arisen so that it arises. And then the fourth, when it does arise, to develop it and maintain it, right? So you can use those four great efforts as a kind of guideline for how to work with what's arising, what hasn't yet arisen, what may arise that you would like to abandon, what may arise that you would like to develop.
And I think for me, I try to sense when I'm using the practice, when it's become a stick with which to beat away the defilements in the way, or when I'm trying to block out as opposed to allow and let go of. Mm-hmm. And that varies, it depends on.
Yes, it's very variable and very dependent on what's happening and how predominant something is in your experience. So, you know, you can let something be in the background and be aware of it. Or if it's asserting itself so strongly that it's not in the background, you take care of it. It's asking for attention. Yes, please.
This is probably exactly the same question. You probably have already answered it. I was thinking about something we were talking yesterday, and it's in terms of, it's the right word, this the practice of loving kindness and things like that. I put it in terms of self. But you mentioned it in terms of dependent origination. And it's just when things are coming up like that, it's
asking is a question about how to become completely aware of all of the elements of your experience. Is that a pretty good summary so that I don't have to repeat everything you said? Okay, so we talked yesterday about investigation, right? And sometimes that can be misinterpreted to mean a kind of proliferation about what's happening, because that's how we're used to processing our stuff, right? But investigation, becoming aware deeply of the elements of our experience, and I think what you're saying is, you know, there's so much in any experience. There's what's happening, there's the conditioning that's causing us to respond in the way that we're responding or react in the way that we're reacting, and how do we kind of parse all of that out and see what's really going on. That's the sense I get of your question. First of all, the more precise your attention is, the more information you will have. So when we talk about attention, and we touched on this yesterday, attention can be superficial, right? So we know we're breathing. So we go, oh, okay, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, in-out, in-out. That's one way. Another way is if I'm paying attention at the belly, to see on the in-breath the full scope of the in-breath from its beginning, noticing how as it begins, it expands the belly. The belly starts to expand, and then there may be a pause, and then there's more expansion. And if I look at the expansion, I notice that there's hardness that's appearing. And I may even notice that there's a temperature to it, that as the belly is expanding, there is a warmth that's pervading the belly. And I may notice that this is a short breath. And then I'll notice the pause and notice how everything relaxes in the body of the pause. And then I may notice at that point that the mind wants to jump off, and I bring it back. And then I notice that the out-breath starts to happen, and the belly starts to collapse, and there's a softness that starts to happen. And I notice movement and vibration and a bit of tingling and a coolness that starts to happen. So those are two different ways of noticing the in and out-breath. So the first way is a really superficial way. The second way is a really precise and gentle and kind way of really noticing everything that's going on. If I'm training the attention in that kind of precise way, I will notice, because I'm really paying attention, when a thought wants to assert itself. And for me, I notice that there's a kind of harbinger of a thought in the mind. There's a kind of and then the thought appears full blown. But there's a harbinger. There's something that says, oh, thought coming. And it happens. And then I notice how the thought kind of appears and it opens up. And at that point I know, oh, this is thinking. And I notice how the thought fills the mind. And I notice how when I note thinking, that the air kind of comes out of it, and it kind of collapses. And sometimes it feels like it collapses, and sometimes it feels like it falls over a cliff. But it disappears. So I notice, oh, the thought has disappeared. And then I come back to the breathing of the body, and I notice that I'm in the middle of, the breath is in the middle of the expansion. So I start to watch the expansion again. And I notice so sometimes the breath pauses and continues, pauses and continues. So one out breath can have like 12 pauses and 12 continuations. That's how precise one's attention can be on just the breath. And when the attention is being trained to be that precise, then we can rely totally on our attention to give us the information that we need about what is actually happening, not only in the body, but also in the mind. So sadness is arising in the middle of that attention to the breath. Oh, how does sadness arise in the body? How does it arise in the emotions? What happens? Oh, if I'm paying attention, sadness doesn't just appear from the blue and I'm in the middle of it and helpless with it. It kind of rumbles. It rumbles in the body and in the mind, and it starts to happen. And I know, oh, there was a thought before. Oh, what was that thought? Oh, it was a thought about my mother, or a thought about my father, or a thought about something somebody said. Oh, sadness appeared. Oh, okay, so now sadness is here. How do I work with that? Oh, I feel it in the chest. What feels in the chest? Oh, it feels as if something's pressing down on the chest. Oh, heaviness, heaviness, hardness, 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 tightness, tightness. Oh, now it's in the throat. Oh, what's happening in the throat? Constriction, constriction, heat, heat, heat. Oh, what's under that? Oh, anger, rage. What's anger like? Oh, throbbing in the head. Right? And in all of that, I saw that there was a thought about mom or dad or what somebody said. And so the information is there. It's right there in this whole body mind. And I don't have to think about it to say, oh, well, it's because, you know, I thought about my mom and, you know, I remember the time when she did this and she should have said that to me, or she trained me to be like this, or she trained me to be like that. It's just being so present for what's happening that the information presents itself. And you can have confidence and reliance on that because you know your practice. And you know your practice is deepening and maturing as you sit more and more, because the more you do it, the more natural it becomes to do. It's not like you have to make yourself do it. In the beginning, you do, because we're not used to doing that. We're not used to paying attention on that level, right? We're used to paying attention on the very kind of, because our minds are flitting all over the place, so. You know, so I see Maureen, and then I see Karen, and I see Althea, and the mind is just going, you know, I'm not focusing on Karen. It's Karen, you know, so the name Karen connotes a whole bunch of things, but I'm not examining that, because I'm just saying, oh, that's Karen, right? But suddenly, if I pay attention to her, I'm now in a relationship, I'm now connecting with Karen, and I'm feeling. Because we're all somewhat psychic or sensitive. So I'm feeling Karen, right? But before, my attention was just, oh, that's Karen, as if I know Karen. I don't know Karen, because I haven't connected. But the minute I start to connect, I know her. I know her on a deep level. Right? I hear, I see, and I'm aware of the hearing and the seeing and what's and how that's affecting this organism. And I'm making sure I'm paying attention, right? I'm not missing anything. Well, I may be missing a few things, but I'm paying as good attention as I can possibly pay. And that connects me to the experience of seeing Karen, of hearing Karen, of feeling her field. And so we get really connected to our experience in a way. So, you know, if something's amiss between so friendly when I said hello. Right? Something's up. What's up? What's up with that? And I start to investigate. What am I feeling? Right? I look at her. What do I feel? Oh, I feel love. Oh, there's a little bit of an irritation there, or whatever it is. Right? Side about. Oh, feel it in the belly. Feel it in the hands. Feel it in the head. So I'm aware of my experience, and that honors her. Because I'm not bypassing what I'm feeling in response to her. So I can work with what I'm feeling and investigate it and see it. And then perhaps we need to talk about something that's not quite right between us. And we investigate in that way, but we're aware of the fact that we're investigating now on a different level when we're talking about it than when we're just feeling what's happening here. So we walk around the world with a kind of, you know, which is why I did the metta practice yesterday the way I did it, because we can train ourselves to become more sensitive to not just what's in the bag of skin, right, but begin to feel into the field of feeling that connects us. You know, so we expand the skin out a couple of centimeters so that we're now feeling into the field. Feeling into what's here. And this is beautiful practice. This is beautiful Dharma practice, because we're training ourselves how to deep